Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, sex advice columnist Dan Savage with those rare times when he thinks it's okay for married people to have an affair. A mystery in Dumbo today. Why did the popular Rebar restaurant and event hall suddenly close, leaving lots of June wedding couples in the lurch and Rebar owners with their hefty deposits? And he disappeared for days. Your stories of things you left in a New York City taxi, including some that even got returned. But first today, the media world and some readers of the New York Times are trying to make sense of the wildly conflicting narratives about the firing of Jill Abramson, executive editor of the New York Times. Sex discrimination, the glass cliff, as some people call it, simply a bad job by her or a better candidate now available and ready? And what about the conflicting accounts of whether she was getting paid less than male editors for the same or even higher level work before she was fired? With us are NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik and Rachel Sklar, founder of The List, an online community that advocates for women in tech and business, and former media reporter for Huffington Post, Media Bistro, and others. She wrote about the Abramson firing on Medium over the weekend. We've linked to that if you want to read it on our Brian Lehrer Show page at WNYC.org. Go along to there if you want to follow along. Hi, David. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Hey, thanks, Brian, for having us.
And by the way, I don't know if you guys even know, Jill Abramson is at this moment delivering a commencement address at Wake Forest University, which has opened like this.
I think the only real news here today is your graduation from this great university. First of all, congratulations. I'm impressed that your achievements have attracted so much media attention, as well they should.
So we will keep listening in for any other, let's say, journalistic or more op-ed kinds of morsels from Jill Abramson at Wake Forest happening right now. But David Folkenflik, what's the official line from the Times on why Jill Abramson was fired?
The official line from the Times, which has been sort of fleshed out, it seems, additionally every 36 hours or so, is that she simply wasn't working in collaborative fashion with her senior news leadership team, shutting them out of key decisions, behaving in an arbitrary, capricious, imperious way, and that also she was dissembling, even misleading her bosses, the CEO of the New York Times, Mark Thompson, and especially the publisher and chairman of the parent New York Times company, Arthur Sulzberger himself, that he had ultimately lost faith in her, that she had been misleading the person who had been clearly designated as her successor. That's managing editor Dean Baquet, who's now executive editor and a tremendously accomplished journalist himself, but that she had also misled her bosses about the extent to which she had been consulting with him about a proposed restructuring of her news team and the proposal to bring in a very senior managing editor for digital. So, you know, the official line is that there's been mounting concern and anger in the newsroom, that she'd effectively lost the newsroom, particularly the news leadership, and that they then lost faith with her over time as she became both combative with them, that is her bosses, but also that she misled them about the way in which she was going about this restructuring.
So, Rachel Sklar, you've been raising questions in your writing of the double standard for women, the glass cliff of top women executives having a higher firing rate than top men in general, and details of Jill Abramson. Do you think Jill Abramson would still have her job if she was doing the same quality work and was a guy?
I think it's important to say at the top that it's possible that everything David just said is true, is the case, that there was management, there were management problems, that there was, at best confusion and at worst misleading statements about the ascension of the potential new co-managing editor for digital, Janine Gibson. All of that can be true, and there still can be a double standard applied to women in a workplace, even when they get the top job. So it's difficult in any circumstance to be able to go back in time and say, well, if this person were a man, you know, all of these things wouldn't happen. But I think it's, you know, you can point to the strongly gendered tropes that had been raised in Dylan Byers' first report that there was problems in the newsroom, which were complaints about her personality and her manner as opposed to her work product and the results at the paper. And I think that that has been what women have found really disquieting. And when I say women, I don't mean all women. I mean generally a lot of women have really found it disquieting because it sounds very familiar, which is to say that there is a likability penalty for women as they ascend in power, that women do tend to be judged more harshly. You know, women who are all business and, you know, difficult to work with or difficult to please are perceived as just being difficult as opposed to having high standards or, you know, being obsessed with the pursuit of excellence. Anne Friedman wrote a great thing about this on her Tumblr, just about the different perceptions in the way women and men in leadership roles are perceived. And I think that is what is troubling here. I think this is what people have found disquieting. And more to the point, there's a direct contrast with the last executive editor who was deposed for cause, essentially. Although he wasn't actually deposed, he resigned after a very fraught time at the New York Times, during which it was found that his own management style had enabled a serial plagiarist and fabulist in Jason Blair. So
right, and that editor was Howell Raines.
Yes, yes. So that is that direct contrast, and sort of the general gendered nature of many of the complaints is what has, I think, which at first blush, which caused consternation, particularly in the historic nature of Jill Abramson as the first female editor atop the masthead. Mm-hmm.
Raises these questions. So David Folkenflik, to one of Rachel's points. Through all of this intrigue, and I call it intrigue, at least two things I've read have compared it to Game of Thrones, most people seem to say the Times content looks great, that Jill Abramson's New York Times was as tough and important a journalistic New York Times as its fans would want. Is that an accepted truth at the Times in whatever camp of employees?
Yeah, I think that people do accept that the Times has been a very strong journalistic presence. Look, they were shut out of reporting Pulitzers this year, and that's sort of taken as a mortal affront inside the Times newsroom any year in which that occurs. But they won 8 during her very brief tenure as executive editor, and many more during her time as managing editor at the Times as well. She cited this morning in her remarks at Wake Forest University the work that Times journalists have done in China, a place where authorities have blocked their website in retribution, have held up visas, in one case detained a reporter, and even, according to security experts I talked to, had hackers linked to the army get into New York Times computers to try to mine their hard drives for information and to screw around with their reporting abilities. So, you know, she's very proud of what they've done there, and it takes a very hard-minded editor-in-chief backed by a, you know, tough CEO and publisher to continue doing that, even though China was a market that the Times has wanted to penetrate and do better in economically. So, yeah, a very good report. That said, you know, there are editors and reporters I've talked to about 24 people inside the Times newsroom and with ties to the various 4 top players in this saga, in this drama. And they would say, you know, there were times at which stories were held up or projects seemed to float, questions about the way in which the Times innovated digitally. And there was, in fact, a report done by led by Arthur Sulzberger Jr.'s son, Arthur Gregg Sulzberger, in which it said the Times, for all of its successes digitally, has failed to innovate enough and take advantage of opportunities. But, you know, in reality, what you had was a toxic stew. You know, Abramson, you know, there's this question of whether she had consulted with her managing editor and brought people along. There's a question about whether she had fully informed her bosses about that. There were questions about her confrontation with corporate executives in recent weeks over her conclusion that she had not been paid commensurate with her male predecessor and sometime mentor, Bill Keller, but also that when she had been managing editor, she had been less paid by somebody who was less well paid by somebody who was probably slightly subordinate to her.
Less well paid.
You know, there were all these things taken together. the confrontational nature of the way she approached this, the fact she hired a lawyer, all of these things are ingredients in a relationship that wasn't working out. And the last thing I'll say on that is just that ultimately publishers and corporate owners deserve an editor-in-chief they can work with regardless of the merits of the case. There has to be a functioning relationship there.
And Rachel, there is a fair amount of back and forth on social media about whether Jill Abramson was being paid less than comparable men at the Times for the job of executive editor, and whether she raised that as an issue just before getting sacked and was being paid previously less than someone who was actually below her. What can you tell is confirmed about what happened or didn't happen along those lines?
Well, nothing seems to be confirmed in terms of the absolute number of her compensation in relation to her predecessors, based on the New York Times official contention that she was actually getting, she was compensated more. But the definition of what compensation actually includes is it just because the stock price was, you know, had gone up during her tenure, rather than an absolute value assigned to her that was more or less or equal than her predecessors. So it is hard to say. Canaletta had a lot of facts and figures in his second report on this. He's been he's been on fire over at the New Yorker, and it seemed as presented by Canaletta pretty conclusive that she was being paid as much as $100,000 less for different roles than her predecessor. So the issue of equal pay is extremely germane. It's hotly debated, but the fact remains that the reason that it's an issue is because it happens so often,
right,
and so depressingly regularly. But I think that the point has been made that the equal pay issue may well be a red herring in this regard, and it may certainly be a red herring in terms of why Abramson was finally let go by the New York Times. I think David's description of it being a toxic stew actually is the perfect description, because it really does sound like there was such a breakdown in trust and management and just being able to work together over there that really it obviously did seem to come to a head. But what was troublesome about the equal pay element was that, you know, the initial reaction, as reported by Aletta of the New York Times spokesperson, was that, you know, that Abramson, having retained a lawyer and made this claim and made this complaint, was perceived to be, you know, just like part of her combative behavior. And that sets off a warning bell, because you know, equal pay, you should be able to complain about being compensated less than your male counterpart.
Right, without losing your job over
right,
it.
Right, without retribution.
Yes.
So that's the issue there.
And David, you broke some of the reporting on this. What's your best understanding of the pay issue and who said what to whom?
Well, you know, obviously I've looked through a lot of SEC documents and other kinds of things to try to pin it down, and those are not things that are publicly revealed. Canaletta, as Rachel said, did have some figures, but it's hard to pin down full compensation. You know, people who are close to her have conveyed concerns. If you look at the total compensation, which would include pensions are actually calculated in a great part by, you know, years of service. Bill Keller, her predecessor, had been at the Times a lot longer, and in fact pensions for managers had been frozen in 2009 amid the global financial crisis. So the Times says apples and oranges, and Jill Abramson's loyalists say, wait, not apples and oranges at all. This is the first female executive editor in the history of the, you know, perhaps the nation's most important news organization. Ultimately, you know, what she's paid one way or another conveys how much she's being valued. And I think that the real thing is, this is Sulzberger and his lieutenants at the New York Times Company have insisted that gender did not play a role in this, And I think that, you know, from, you can't get in a person's mind, but I think that they're being sincere in that. And yet certainly that Jill Abramson concluded that she was not being handled in the mm-hmm. way that a male counterpart did. And therefore gender is an element of this, regardless of what actually Sulzberger's intent was. If he didn't want ultimately Dean Baquet so much to be executive editor, in fact, if he hadn't thought hard about naming Dean Baquet when Bill Keller stepped down in 2011, a lot of this would have been smoothed out. If he wanted Jill Abramson to continue, it could have been resolved. The question of who communicated with what when would have worked out.
So what did Jill Abramson say only moments ago at her commencement address at Wake Forest University, which is still going on? to all these graduates who are about to set out looking for work?
My only reluctance in showing up today was that the small media circus following me would detract attention away from you, the fabulous class of 2014. What total knockouts you are. Yeah. What's next for me? I don't know. So I'm in exactly the same boat as many of you.
Ha, ha, ha. And we're just about out of time. But, David, through all of this intrigue, one thing that's getting lost in the sauce here is the historic ascension of the first black person to lead the New York Times as the first woman executive editor is unceremoniously canned. That's Dean Baquet, who, among his credentials, quit the L.A. Times to protest cuts to the newsroom. Anything to say about Baquet? And I also read that he was so unhappy with his relationship with Jill Abramson and her management, as he saw it, that he basically gave Sulzberger either she goes or I goes, that kind of ultimatum, and Sulzberger decided he valued Baquet more. Is that your understanding of what happened? David? David Folkenflik? All right. Rachel, since you seem to be the only one left.
I wasn't thinking
about it. I'm back. I'm back. Sorry, guys.
All right. 15 seconds for each of you. Real quick. Rachel? Now we're out of time.
I think that it was much more complicated than just Sulzberger deciding to pick Baquet. I do think that it's clear that that toxic stew had become unmanageable. I just think that, wow, there are ways to handle a situation much better than the New York Times did this one.
David, I'll add the question, did Sulzberger bungle this in any case? Because people have been fired and replaced as executive editor before, but not usually with this much disquiet and hardly a word about the historic ascension that is taking place at the moment of Dean Baquet, the first African-American executive editor and a very talented guy.
Totally unfair to eclipse his appointment. It is a historic moment, and he is a tremendous champion of journalism and a tremendous journalist himself. I will say that, you know, in the absence of an absolute scandal, Sulzberger had to figure out a way if he wanted to change, and he does deserve to work with an executive editor with whom he has a functioning relationship. But when he decided he wanted to change this, he had to do it with some finesse and grace, given that she too, you know, was a historic appointment as the first female executive editor. And it does spin off all these other questions, all these other elements, and all this tumult and uncertainty inside the Times newsroom itself and for many of the readers who hold it dear.
Rachel Sklar, founder of The List, an online community that advocates for women in tech and business. We've linked to her article on Medium from over the weekend on our page. You can read it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, thank you both so much.
You bet.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, a mystery in Dumbo. Why did the popular Rebar restaurant and event hall suddenly close, leaving lots of June wedding couples in the lurch and the Rebar owner with their hefty deposits as he disappeared for days? Stay with us.